The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Shane. It is News Talk. It's the Pat Kenny Show. It's Anton in for Pat. As you heard, talks between Aer Lingus and IALPA failed to reach an agreement yesterday, so an indefinite work to rule has come into effect from midnight last night. That means thousands of holidaymakers could be impacted from today on into the weekend and thereafter. For more on this, I'm joined by Noel Cunningham, Ambassador for Harvey's Point in Donegal, and Owen Curry, Editor of Air and Travel magazine. Owen, if I might start with you, there's been a huge amount of discussion about this IR battle between Aer Lingus and IALPA. Can you come back to the impact that it's going to have on passengers? As we stand now, we're in the worked rule. How long is that going to last? What does it consist of? And what's the story with the strikes?
Sad thing, Anton, is we're not even at the starting line because the action begins on Saturday. As you pointed out, the work to rule has led to the cancellation of about between 10 and 20 flights a day. The reason Aer Lingus preemptively cancelled those is that it's peak season, and if a pilot is sick, there is no chance of another one covering for them, and that means that passengers will have flights cancelled at the gate. To avoid assembling people at a gate and telling them their flight is cancelled, they preemptively cancelled about between 10 and 20 a day. What they've done is they've rerouted passengers. Some passengers have got emails saying that their carrier will not be Aer Lingus. They have access to other aircraft within the group. The group being the four airline group IAG, which includes British Airways, Iberia and Vueling. This is really a sort of a dusting up before what happens next Saturday, which is a full stoppage for a day. And it's open-ended, Anton. It's like not like you say, I have a work to rule that starts Wednesday and finishes Sunday. Aer Lingus cancelled the first 5 days of flights, and now they've cancelled Monday and Tuesday as well. I would expect them to start cancelling the flights later next week. As I say, not a large amount of flights being cancelled because of the work to rule. The real action begins on Saturday, this is the first of the industrial action. It's a one-day stoppage. And that is the only thing that really counts as industrial action in the legislation that we have. So it's a little bit complicated. People are being affected by something that isn't even the start of industrial action.
Although if it waddles like a duck and it quacks like a duck, if you're the passenger, it feels an awful lot like a duck. The work to rule, if it cancels your flight, whether it fits the category of official industrial relations action or not, it still means you're not going where you want to go.
And not only that, but we've had, even before the industrial reaction, we had a lot of cancellations due to just being uncooperative. Something external happens, big incident last Sunday was the power outage in Manchester, and Aer Lingus flights were disrupted, as were Ryanair and EasyJet. The difference was that Aer Lingus pilots were uncooperative. Things like a paper load sheet wasn't accepted. It has to be digital. If there's no power, it can't be digital. All of those sort of in small little acts of belligerence are going on in the mountain. IALPA deny that this is the case, particularly when they had 14 cancellations in one day due to sick leave. IAG and Aer Lingus are saying it's a bit too much of a coincidence.
When last we talked, Owen, the discussion was around whether or not de-escalation was possible because of the Labour court attendance of both parties and the potential that maybe that might defrost relations. What now of the other options to either side? What are the chances of further escalation as this continues?
There are loads of chances of further escalation. A small incident can drive IALPA over the edge and lead them to bring forward their one-day stoppage, turn the one-day stoppage into something more aggressive. I expect what will happen is, if we're not resolved by Saturday, and I'd still be hopeful that they could, if we're not resolved by Saturday, we will see another announcement of further one-day stoppages. It won't be all out. On the Aer Lingus side, they can escalate it very easily. They can just say, do what Willie Walsh did in 2003 and shut the airline down and say there's too much uncertainty and closing everything down, and then that sort of forces the issue. It's a question of, are we at that stage yet? Alan Joyce did something very similar, famously, with Qantas in 2011, which brought Australia to a halt, very dramatic, but it solved the union problem. He was dealing with 17 different trade unions and a history of belligerence there, and it made him probably the most hated man in Australia for a little while. Now, the other escalation has already started at Aer Lingus. They've withdrawn investment, Anton. This is a really scary bit for me as some an Irish person covering aviation worldwide. I'm in Seattle here for a Boeing briefing today. What that means is that aircraft that were repainted from the Aer Lingus colours to the Iberia colours, the two A321 XLRs were supposed to come to, they're gone to Iberia instead. That's about $500 million worth of investment. So if the IAG, when Aer Lingus is the poorest performing of the four airlines in the group, if IAG say, okay, we're not going to, it's not that they're going to shut down Aer Lingus or reflag the aircraft to Manchester or anything. It's just that they'll stop investing in it and it'll just be allowed to trundle along at its own level instead of the ambitious growth plans that we've seen from Aer Lingus, a big performance, high performance airline across the Atlantic, you know, with all the investment in technology. And that's where the likes of Noel looking in from a side will feel incredibly helpless, because we get 11 million inbound tourists into Ireland. We're a high performer in international tourism because of that international airline. If this action leads to IAG just losing interest in Aer Lingus, Aer Lingus is a Spanish airline. The CEO that came to the trade talks yesterday came from the British Airways cargo division. There isn't the ideological or the emotional buy-in by the management in Aer Lingus that there was when we had previous disputes back in 1985, 2003, 2008. So that's the real danger, is IAG will lose interest in Aer Lingus. It's a poor performer. They'll say these pilots are asking too much. We'll just let it trundle along at its own level, or even start to reduce the investment into Aer Lingus.
Owen, stay with me if you would. You mentioned Noel. That's Noel Cunningham, ambassador for Harvey's Point in Donegal. Noel, are you seeing any impact at this point? Have you got guests getting in touch saying that we are concerned about whether or not we will get to Harvey's Point? Do you think it's going to have an impact on tourism?
Good morning, Owen, and a very good morning to you, Anton. Owen summed it up very well there. There are two key words. First of all, peak season, and the other thing, investment. Is there uncertainty? Of course. That's what travellers want. They want certainty that they will get from A to B and back to A. That is key for any travel plan. And of course, are we getting calls? Every provider in the country and a lot of people in Ireland who are going out of the country are making those calls. Because, for example, we have a bride who's flying in from the United States with an entourage of people. They're getting married in Donegal. They are calling Harvey's Point and saying, what can you do? What can you assure us? We can't, because you see, we're now engaged in a very dramatic game of hardball, that you have Aer Lingus pilots demanding a certain increase. And Aer Lingus, as Owen has said, you know, we're not dealing just with a little dispute here. We're looking at a major company who are saying, you know what, we will not play hardball. You know, we'll just let this roll along, because at the end of the day, investment fails, and all of a sudden one of our biggest providers and the people. I mean, how long, Anton, how many times have we spoken about tourism and the west of Ireland and the Wild Atlantic Way? It took us decades to get Americans to come past Galway to move up north, northwest, along that beautiful coast. Now we've done so much in recent years to establish a certain flow of particularly transatlantic visitors, and that's all at risk. I mean, we are in a very precarious position, because it has that knock-on effect that goes on for years, and we just in hospitality seem to be fighting a never-ending battle. You come out of COVID, you survive by the skin of your teeth. And now this is actually more concerning than COVID. It has a more dramatic effect. That certainty is out of the market. People don't know what they're going to get to travel, when this will all end, because the nature of these kind of disputes has changed in recent years. you know, the companies who operate these major companies aren't as keen to give in or as disposed to giving in. They just say, you know what, let's see how this pans out. And that's certainly with the breakdown of the immediate talks that were happening yesterday. That's such a bad omen, you know. And then some people say, what can the government do? I don't like to see government getting too involved in kind of running businesses. But whatever can be done, you know, from the highest level to get these people back to a negotiating table, because going back to what Owen said, peak season, no certain day, either in or out of the country, it's tragic.
And one assumes that American, and obviously the American market matters because they may not be the most significant contributor to our tourism trade in terms of total numbers, but they are hugely significant in terms of total spend. I assume when an American is looking at their big European holiday, there is no great moral onus on them to say, I'll go to Ireland. If they look and discover, well, there's a risk about my ticket, Scotland is attractive, France is attractive, England is attractive, and we get shoved down the list.
Absolutely, because Owen will confirm this. The Americans who are travelling to our neck of the woods are combining, you know, a visit to the United Kingdom, to Scotland. You know, it's not just necessarily exclusively to Ireland. Most of the people I speak to in Harvey's Point are there on a stage before they go to a neighbouring country. And you are absolutely right. You and I would do the same. We'd say, you know what, let's drop the Irish leg. We can most certainly get to Edinburgh. From Edinburgh, we can definitely get to London. So let's just forget about Ireland and off we go.
Noel, thanks very much for joining us this morning. That's Noel Cunningham, Ambassador for Harvey's Point in Donegal. Owen, can I go back to you? This is Owen Curry, Editor of Éireann Travel Magazine. Can I go back to you on that issue of where you described Willie Walsh shutting down Aer Lingus back in the day, where you described the same thing as happening with Qantas? If, and it's a big if, but if we do get to that point, does IAG step in and provide service from British Airways or Vueling or Iberia, or do we find ourselves fairly cut off from transatlantic, at least Aer Lingus provided transatlantic?
Yeah, the obligations are still there with on the airline to get customers to where they're supposed to go. They could just close down the Aer Lingus side of the operation, but it would cause havoc and it would cause compensation knock-ons. It's different. It's much more difficult to do it legally than it was back in 2003. It's also the what we've seen is the evolution of EU 261, which only came in 2004. But initially, strikes by an airline were not considered a cause for compensation. Now that is the case. It's actually been weaponized. IALPA's publicly said that they hope Aer Lingus will meet their obligations of paying out up to €600 in compensation for the passenger, for each passenger, because of the cancellations which have been caused by the dispute. So it's not a simple thing like that. But they will be looking at they do have options to escalate it, to become more hardline. I think they have left, Aer Lingus have left us, left IALPA to do all the running on this. And what the Aer Lingus was hoping for, you know, just looking in at it from the outside, when you look at how the last major European pilots dispute was solved with Scandinavian SAS, it's always the arbitrators. It's always outside intervention. There's a choreography. You go into talks. The talks break down. The goes in our case to the WRC and then to the Labour Court. The Labour Court comes out. Both sides are equally grumpy with the outcome, but it muddles through and it gets. What's interesting here is that IALPA have rejected outside intervention twice, and the Labour Court did the right thing by trying to restart it as an outside intervention with the separate talks. There is another element in there that Forza, who are the umbrella union to which IALPA is affiliated, were also in those separate talks. Obviously, they didn't go well. If they had, we'd have people in the same room here this morning. But it's just because the first push didn't work doesn't mean it won't work. There is a big gap in the pay, which is played out. Everybody knows it's 12% on one side and a 9% recommendation by the Labour Court and a 24% demand. But there's a lot to talk about once they get in the room. And it will be productivity for pay. And everybody seems to know that. It's sort of, it's like this game is all being played out while everybody knows there's going to be talks, there's going to be productivity for pay, there's going to be a deal. Why are you putting passengers to all this enormous stress when everybody knows that's what the outcome will be?
Oh, and what are the pressures that will come to bear on either side? Because if we were back in the days when Aer Lingus was state-owned, ministers and officials would be making calls and putting on the thumbscrews, but that doesn't apply anymore. So what is it that will start to bite for both the company and for the union?
I think that realization hasn't come through. The phone call came from Merrion Street to Aer Lingus management saying, you've made your point, give them what they want. There was one of the great CEOs, Michael Dargan. There are three CEOs of Aer Lingus in the first more than 50 years of its existence. And Michael Dargan used to say to his negotiators, lose some face, lads, you've a lot of it. That was how trade union disputes in Aer Lingus were resolved. Management were in a weak position because the political pressure that a union, and it wasn't always the pilots, could put on meant that they would be forced to concede. It's very, very different because IAG they don't have a history of pilot disputes. They've been quite good at managing pilot industrial relations. BA would have been famous for pilot for strikes. They've had very, very successful negotiations for agreements. And that makes their view from Madrid quite different as they're looking at Aer Lingus and the pilot demand, especially when there's been arbitrations, there's been intervention. And the force from the, on the, you wonder, is Forza, the trade union on the umbrella trade union on the IALPA side, are they going to take a less hardline position at some stage? And are you, what you wonder?
But it's hard to see what will catalyze this. I mean, you've got a company that is a sub part or a sub brand of a much more significant organization, is profitable and is part of a profitable group. And you've got pilots earning up to €283,000 a year. We're a long way from Larkin and the lockout. Nobody is going to starve anytime soon.
Yeah, as some people have said, that these guys have more in common with William Martin Murphy than they have with Jim Larkin. It's not a blue collar, but you can't just dismiss the pilot demand because they're index linking themselves to the international.
Oh no, sorry, just to clarify, I'm not in any way dismissing the demand. I'm more saying that the kind of things that usually come to bite, that striking workers have to find a way to pay the mortgage, that doesn't apply quite as significantly.
I wouldn't ever suspect you would, Anton. I'm just making the general point that there's public sympathy is not really with them because of their salary. But at the same time, it doesn't really matter. What really matters here is that they're keeping in line with the international norms for their position and their post. And at some stage, what will catalyse this is at some stage they've got to sit down and say, oh, what more can we achieve? We've scared the pants off the passengers, we've dominated the news agenda, and we've caused millions of euro, couldn't run into tens of millions of euro of extra expense to Aer Lingus in the contingency plans. And that money will have to be paid back by passengers and their fares, by the way. So all of that has been achieved. What's more to be achieved? The current IALPA position, if I'm reading it correctly, is that we haven't put enough pressure on Aer Lingus yet. We can continue to put more and more pressure, and putting pressure on Aer Lingus means putting pressure on the passengers.
Owen, thank you very much for that, and thank you particularly given the time that it must be where you are. That is Owen Corry, editor of Air and Travel magazine. Now again,
the Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance,
weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.